Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown, sitting in for Ann today. Last week, the Columbus Board of Education voted 6-1 to put a property tax question on the ballot this fall. If voters give their approval, the new levy would raise over $76 million a year, with about $8 million of that going to some charter schools. But it won't be an easy sell. Joining us now to discuss the levy question and other issues facing Columbus City Schools is Dr. Dan Good, interim superintendent of the district. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Listeners, we want to hear from you as well. Share your hopes, your concerns, or anything else about Columbus City Schools. Call 614-292-8513. Again, that's 614-292-8513. You can also email the show at allsides@wosu.org. You can tweet us at @WOSUAllSides. And you can find us on Facebook. Now, to put this levy struggle into full context, the district is still dealing with an attendance rigging scandal after auditors discovered the retroactive changing of millions of records. Several top administrators have left the district. I know state and federal authorities are still involved, but Dan Good, to the best of your knowledge, where does this investigation stand now?
It's an ongoing investigation. Certainly the state auditor is continuing to collect records and review those. And we have begun our own internal investigation as well, but that will be ongoing. However, it's not diverting us from our primary mission, which is to ensure the conditions are right for students to succeed beginning on August 21st.
Do you expect the investigation to be finished by November?
Of course, the answer to that lies in the hands of the state auditor. The state auditor has made us aware that there'll be some findings released prior to that time. But again, it's a multivariate investigation, and there may be different pieces disclosed at different points along the way.
Now, that probably, I'm assuming here, would have a big impact on your levy campaign, or at least cast a cloud over it potentially if this investigation is still ongoing.
I imagine it could, but, we take this issue very, very seriously, and we're doing all we can to restore the trust and faith of our community. We're working cooperatively with the state auditor. The auditor's office has agreed to review our new protocols. We are going to put in place a random record audit that was recommended by the state auditor's office. So we have new systems and protocols that we're communicating to all our staff beginning this Wednesday with our all administrators meeting. And we do continue to have meetings with staff members with whom there have been allegations or any evidence of wrongdoing, and where that evidence is overwhelming, we've taken swift and decisive action. As well, we opened a new central enrollment center, which is another way of improving your data integrity and customer relations at the same time. So hopefully the community will recognize that, again, we're taking this very seriously, and we want them to have confidence in their elected governance board and certainly the administration, teachers of Columbus City Schools.
We've seen some top-level administrators leave in the last few months. Can we expect more over the summer?
We are in the process of reorganizing our table of organizations to put as many supports as possible into the buildings so that we will have teachers on special assignment, coordinators, supervisors, other professionals at the building level. Where we're able to consolidate roles and responsibilities, we're doing that. And in positions where we're able, we're reducing those top-level administrative positions. We are not finished yet. We had projected originally anywhere from 7 to 10 and around $1.5 million. And as of this morning, it looks like we'll be inching upward to $2 million in reductions. And that, too, is a part of the community's expectation and another way to demonstrate that we're listening.
You talk about reconstruction and new protocols. Is that kind of the messaging as you talk about the importance of this levy, that it's a new day for Columbus City Schools? Is that kind of what you're trying to sell to voters?
It is a new day, and really the foundations of the levy is to support student achievement by providing more to teachers and principals, expanding our partnerships, investing in key areas that have the greatest impact on student success. And some of those areas include the preschool offerings, so that up to 4,800 students across our city will have access to those high-quality early learning experiences, increasing the classroom technology across all of our schools so that children can be more successful in a blended learning environment. We have innovation funds so that we can provide more of that autonomy at the local level for buildings to replicate high-performing schools. Certainly there's an interest in expanding our partnership opportunities in the community with public and private interests. We also have funds for an independent auditor, really, which is a separate issue on the ballot, again, so that we're more transparent and this community can have faith that their tax dollars are being spent wisely.
You talk about innovation funds. Those are basically public-private partnerships, right?
That's correct. There's a match intended there that some of that money is raised through the levy and the other would be matched from private contributions.
Just how much is at stake with this levy in particular? What does this mean for the short-term health and the long-term health of the district?
I think the passage of the levy is essential for the long-term health of the district. We need to have more evidence-based practices in place that can be sustained in the future. We know technology is a piece of that. We need to focus on where we're doing well, where we have A and B high-performing schools, and again, duplicating those, replicating them in every neighborhood so that every neighborhood has a high-performing school choice for those families. And they could elect any of the other wonderful programs in Columbus, but the one in closest proximity to their home certainly needs to be a valuable competitor in that arena.
And you mentioned you have made, I think you said, about $2 million in cuts to this point, and you still have a lot more to go to meet the recommendations of the Education Commission. What's the timeline for that?
Actually, there have been over $15 million in reductions already. The $2 million, or what we're edging toward, $2 million just in administration reduction in force, and so laying off specific positions. And we try to do that through attrition. We're not interested in unemploying individuals because we know then, of course, they tax the unemployment benefit and also rely more heavily on social services. So through attrition, we've been able to find homes for many of those employees, but those higher-level, higher-paying positions are being reduced. And that's about around what we're thinking is going to be about $1.9 million.
That's the strategy for the rest of the cuts recommended in the Education Commission by the Education Commission?
Not at all. There are a number of recommendations that came out of the operations review, and it really crosses all departments and operations and also some of our academic functions as well. And we're looking at program profiles for each of those programs and services that are on that list and making certain we can demonstrate a return on investment. Otherwise, then it does become a program or a service we need to think about. Can we continue? Can we sustain this? And is it giving us the results that this community deserves?
I'm talking with Columbus City Schools Interim Superintendent Dr. Dan Good. Listeners, you can join the conversation by calling 614-292-8513 if you have a question for the superintendent. Again, 614-292-8513. You can also email the show at allsides@wosu.org. And Dan Good, the Education Commission, without getting too lost in the weeds with all the different recommendations made by the commission, how did you feel about the commission yourselves? I know you came into this a little late from Westerville, but this commission, relatively unique. How did you feel about it?
It is unique, and I thought it was a good signal to the community that every stakeholder is willing to roll up their sleeves and participate in ensuring, again, we have those high-quality schools in each neighborhood. It appears to me to be rather unprecedented where we have this level of involvement and level of commitment, and it's not solely limited to business interests or civic interests in the community. We have neighborhood interests. We have families that without children in the school that are participating in that conversation. It's part of the commitment we've made that we want to continue listening to people, meeting with groups, parents, civic neighborhood associations. I think this evening I'll be down at Southern Orchard Civic Association meeting. Business leaders, faith-based leaders, later this week we have a couple of meetings with clergy from across our community. But we really want to listen and then deepen understanding, engage people in the dialogue, and work towards some shared standards for what those high-performing schools would look like in each of their neighborhoods.
You mentioned it earlier, but a second ballot question going before voters is if they want to create this new district auditor or this independent auditor position. It's billed as an independent auditor who would report to a city commission. What are your hopes for that position? What exactly would you need that person to do?
The function of the independent auditor, that position would actually report to the mayor, the city council president, Franklin County probate judge, the county auditor, the president of the board of education, but again, lend an independent, objective sort of eyes to the operations of the district and provide feedback, and always the focus being on improvement and, again, producing, replicating what we do well and eliminating any waste that's present and evident.
You have Mayor Coleman, who lobbied hard for this commission, which recommended creating this auditor position. Are there any concerns that this position really wouldn't be independent, just beholden to another group of bureaucrats?
Ask me the question another way. I didn't understand.
This is billed as an independent auditor.
Yes, sir.
Would the person really be independent or just beholden to a group of city officials who backed this Education Commission?
Well, no, I think that indeed the auditor would be independent, much as the independent auditor works now and their relationship with the Board of Education. Again, they have a certain set of standards, a certain set of protocols they use to evaluate the operations and provide feedback and findings to whoever their reporting superior is. And I think this would occur the same way.
So you are happy with the auditing framework in place now, and what would possibly be added with this independent auditor?
I'm pleased with the independent auditing we have, that it's currently in place, and certainly would be open to the independent audit that would be our auditor that we established through this particular issue. Yes.
Another kind of hot point part of this is the levy would earmark money for high performing nonprofit charter schools. Bill Bush at the Columbus Dispatch reported last week. There's still some confusion, at least among school board members, over what exactly a nonprofit charter school is. Is that something that you and other district administrators have worked out? Do you know exactly who would get charter money?
I don't believe that we know at this point who would be getting the charter money, except those that would agree and commit to ascribing to the standards that are developed and willing to have their financial records be audited and reported out. There's much more transparency, I believe, in this particular mechanism than there has been in the past. And certainly those community schools would be subject not only to those high academic content standards, but they would be monitored by the independent auditor's office to ensure that, you know, they're financially sound and they're effective and that they're producing high-performing students and through high-performing schools.
We're speaking with Dan Good, interim superintendent of Columbus City Schools. Listeners, if you have a question, call 614-292-8513. Dan Good, you say you don't exactly know who would be eligible for charter money. Is that something you might know by November?
Well, I would think we would be able to indicate which are nonprofit by November, certainly.
Again, recounting, the Columbus Dispatch can only identify nine charter schools that were definitely nonprofit. A board member, Mike Wiles, had proposed breaking up the levy in order to limit the amount of money going to charter schools. What was your reaction to that proposal?
You know, I think that every perspective is a legitimate perspective, and I think it was wise that he placed that out there. Certainly there was not support from the other elected representatives of the community to split that issue. And I think it's a solid issue. I think the issue reflects, again, what the commission's recommendations were. It's consistent with the best practices, much of the Vision 2012 work that the Columbus City Schools have done, and certainly would support the implementation of the interim draft goals that we've developed.
There's currently a case before the Ohio Supreme Court, and they will decide whether White Hat Management, one of the state's largest charter operators, has to share basic information with anyone. Is that something you would support, that charters being obligated to share some basic information?
I would support that. I think if you're a recipient of public funds, you do have an obligation to have transparent fiscal operations and that there should be a public reporting mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dan Good, you're the interim superintendent of Columbus City Schools, which is putting a levy before voters in the fall. You came on the phone here, answered some tough questions, and I'm sure the voters will appreciate that. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Steve, thank you very much.
And coming up, we'll talk with a Columbus Dispatch reporter who's covered all of this, as well as a local education activist. That's after the break here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown sitting in for Ann. In this hour, we've been discussing a new school levy in Columbus that will face voter approval this November. Columbus schools are underperforming but have been plagued by scandals involving grade tampering and attendance record scrubbing. That's leading some to wonder if voters will back the measure. The new levy would give some funding to high-performing nonprofit charter schools, although it's not exactly clear what a nonprofit charter school is and which would qualify for the levy. And joining us now to discuss the levy and some more education topics, Bill Bush, an education reporter with the Columbus Dispatch. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Good morning.
And also with us is Sam Gresham, a government consultant and co-chair of the No School Takeover Coalition. He's also a frequent political commentator on Columbus on the Record on WOSU-TV. Welcome back to the show, Sam.
Well, thank you for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you as well. Join the conversation. Call 614-292-8513. You can also email the show, allsides at WOSU.org. You can tweet at WOSU All Sides, and you can find us on Facebook. Bill Bush from the Columbus Dispatch. Anything Dan Good say there surprise you?
Well, the one thing that was cause for reflection is that the state auditor may be releasing more findings before the November ballot question, and that would certainly cause probably the campaign for the levy. I mean, who knows what those findings could say. If those are going to come out obviously right before the election, that could cause severe problems for any levy campaign, depending on what they are. So that was one thing that, you know, I was not aware of, that that the school district has been notified by the state auditor that sometime before now in November, there could be more information coming out about this data scandal.
Do you think at this point the district is winning this public campaign? I hosted Columbus on the Record a week ago, and all the panelists agree that if the levy was today, it would be dead in the water.
Well, I'd love to see a poll. You know, it's hard to know what that silent majority is thinking at any given time. Obviously, there's a lot of vocal people in the community. And I think you're right. Those people who have come out and spoken out are basically have said they're going to oppose the levy at this point. You know, I think there's been two areas of disagreement with the levy, one of them being the sharing money with charter schools and the other just being in general the data scandal, and that the district hasn't basically come clean and done what it needs to do to get its house in order.
Do you know if the Dispatch is doing any reporting on the poll this summer?
We've discussed it. Matter of fact, we just had a discussion last week, so we're in a very preliminary. You know, a poll costs quite a bit of money, and we're looking at that, but we're not sure that the Dispatch will pay for a poll at this point, just about this issue.
Is this this levy is obviously very important financially, but is it also kind of a referendum on the Columbus School District in general? That's really it's seen its share of trouble, and is this kind of final public opinion of the district that we're looking at in November?
Well, every levy is a referendum on how the school district's doing, and that's pretty much why Ohio has levies. You get a chance every 3, 4, 5 years to decide whether the school district's spending your money appropriately. So this is the first time that I recall that any levy campaign has kicked off with such controversy. I don't know if you were following what happened when Governor Kasich signed the bill that would put the levy on the ballot, but he was greeted by about 100 protesters in Clintonville, and that was shocking to me. Usually if you can get 3 or 4 or 5 protesters together with signs, that's a big accomplishment. When I saw 100 people there banging on drums and marching around the school, I was shocked.
Sam Gresham, you have led some of the, or you did at least earlier this year, lead some protests against the Columbus Education Commission. Are you surprised at all by this this outpouring of protest against the Columbus Education Plan?
No, I'm not at all. I think the community is smart, and they understand the process that where we got to this levy. Traditionally, renewals in the state of Ohio over the last 3 years have been approved at a percentage of 72%. Across the state, only 23% of money for new requests have been approved. So first of all, you're starting uphill because this is a request.
It's always hard to get new tax money.
Right, it's always hard. Now you add the scandal and you add the insecurity and perception of coercion of what has happened to our school board. I mean, look at the formation of this thing. This is not a collegial, collaborative thing between the school board and the corporate communities. They had to go to the General Assembly to put a law in place to force the Columbus schools to do what they wanted to do. And I agree with one of your observations. The independent audit is not independent. He or she reports to somebody, and it's not necessarily the school system that they are reporting to, and it's just another layer. All the funding sources that fund the Columbus Public School conduct audits, and they're independent. So this idea of creating another layer, I as a parent now have to go to somebody beyond the schools, the buildings, to get a regress of my grievances. So I don't think it solves the problem.
I interviewed you over the phone a couple months ago when this all first started, and you used the phrase city takeover of the school district a few times. Do you still feel that way?
It's a corporate takeover of the school.
Corporate takeover.
Columbus is not the first city in this country that's phasing it. Based on the data that we've amassed, there's more than 50 cities across the country here doing that. Primarily, there are two organizations, the Business Roundtable and ALEKS, are putting these programs and roadmaps and blueprints together to allow corporate communities to approach approach the schools in this manner. So it's not a willy-nilly, frequent, random thing. It is a series of scripts that have been put together across the country, and corporate America is moving forward with that script.
Bill Bush, are you seeing a lot of those concerns in your reporting as well?
Well, if one thing I could just comment about, the point about the independent auditor, the notion there was that the auditor be independent of the school board. And because they ran into some issues where the auditor was claiming that she was being pressured by the school board president to end her investigation. So the notion of it being independent, of course, everybody's, got to answer to somebody. Right. We can't have a completely independent auditor that would not answer to anyone. But this notion was that it not answer to the school board itself, which would have a conflict of interest in trying to cover up an investigation of the district. So.
But I think the connotation is that it is independent. If you just call it an auditor, fine. Then don't call it independent. Just call it an auditor.
You say calling it an independent auditor makes it seem better to voters.
Right.
We do have Sean calling from Columbus. Sean, thanks for your call this morning. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. Go ahead.
Hey, I was calling just to say that I have voted every election that I've ever come across in where a levy has been up for the schools. I have always voted for it. This is going to be the first one that I'm not going to vote for, somewhat because of the scandal. I'm really happy to see them cleaning house and getting rid of some of the administrators that were part of the problem recently, and that's a good first step. But there's got to be a lot of time spent trying to re-win the voters in Columbus. And we've got to step beyond old paradigms. We've got to start looking at reinvigorating the family structure in the central Ohio urban area, which has completely fallen apart, and we're never going to educate kids until somebody has the courage to step forward as an education leader and say, if we want to educate kids, the parents have got to be bought in, and money is not the solution to every problem.
Administrators would disagree with you, at least in part, Sean. They would say that money is, for better or worse, a key part of this, and they need this levy for the viability of the district.
Well, I would say that look where that mindset's gotten us.
Mm-hmm. I agree with Sean, and he said something that's very pertinent. That is, parents need to buy into the educational process. Money alone will not, because I ran an institution for 20 years, and we worked in supplemental enrichment programs with kids. We worked with people who had failed in the Columbus Public Schools. And what we found out is until that family buys into the educational process, that family is sold on the educational process, it's much harder for that child to be successful. Now, data also shows you middle class and above parents who have resources and who are engaged in the educational process, their kids do better. So it's not simply a bummer.
When that scandal first came out, I started watching the paper and watching the parents' reaction, and I thought this is finally going to be a wake-up call for Columbus Public Schools parents to realize that Columbus Public Schools have basically abandoned and sold off their children. And there was dead silence. If I would have had my kids in Columbus Public Schools, I would have had hundreds of people rallied to change the situation, and there was dead silence, and that is very telling.
Sean, well, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Bill Bush, let's bring you back into the conversation. Are you meeting a lot of people like Sean when you go to board meetings and when you cover the board and the district?
Yeah, there's been people vocal about this issue. They're opposed to the levy. Like I said, there's two issues, and they boil down to two words: cheaters and charters. That's been the basic focus of the opposition group so far. There's a group of people that they don't want local tax dollars shared with charter schools because mm-hmm. they're just philosophically opposed to that. And then there's this other group that feels that, the district just hasn't been honest and open in their handling of this data scandal. And so the levy campaign's got to overcome those two groups. They've also got to also just overcome your general anti-tax group, which is around at every levy, because this is going to add $315 to the price tag of a $100,000 house each year, which will mean about $1,600, $1,700 a year tax bill going to the Columbus schools for each $100,000 of property value. So this levy has its work cut out for him. Dr. Good stepping into this. He's coming right into the middle of this firestorm, taking over. He's only been on the job about a month, he's certainly got his work cut out for him.
I agree with Bill. There's a silent majority. And the silent majority are people who do not have kids in the Columbus Public Schools and who have supported public schools because they had good feelings about it. in essence, the millage will bring them to attention and bear their attention, as Bill said, with all the scandal and lack of security. I think the third thing is the millage itself.
Aside from the scandal, this would be a hard sell in any election. A 9-mil levy that's going to, by my math, about $450 in new property taxes for the average Columbus home every year.
I agree with you, and I think it's the X factor that nobody wants to talk about in this campaign. And let me be clear, though. I have won 3 Golden Rule Awards from the Columbus Public Schools. All of my kids, all of my grandkids go to the Columbus Public Schools. I've been in a collaborative relationship with the Columbus Public School for 35 years. I support public education. But I'm having a difficult time, like Bill has outlined some components, with this levy and how it's put together. If you had asked me to sit down with you before you put this levy together, there are several things that they have done that I would have told them not to do. Don't do this because it's not going to work. Now, there are 2 communities that make levies work in Columbus, progressive community and the African-American community. And if both of those communities are not in favor of this thing—
That make them work, you mean pass them?
Yeah, generally pass them, yes. The African-American community and the progressive community. The Clintonville people, the Short North people, the people on East South Side. I mean, if you look at House Bill 167, it is a classic piece of moral corrupted legislation that's full of racism and classism. If you really look at—
That's the Columbus Education Plan.
No, the piece of legislation that was passed, House Bill 167, by the General Assembly.
Which piece was that? What was that? What?
That put in place all of this stuff by law that the school board had to do. It didn't talk about a lot of things that need to be dealt with. The gentleman who just called said one of the most ingredients that I know for a fact after 35 years of experience is engaging families in the educational process. This whole report, everything, does not emphasize engaging families in the educational process. Until you do that, 72% of the kids in Columbus Public School have free and reduced lunch. That means they don't have a whole lot of money. Until you get those parents engaged in the educational process, it's not going to change.
A lot of people would argue that they could become more engaged in the educational process with the rise of charter schools. At least the vocal supporters of charter schools have argued that they do a better job of connecting with kids. Are you at all surprised that this charter provision hasn't been worked out at this point in the levy?
Well, let's start with the record of charter schools. It's not great. Mediocre at best. I think Bill will agree with me on that. So it's not a panacea. It doesn't solve the problem. Now, it has been held out as a panacea to solving all the problems, all the movies that have been put together, the documentaries. But when the data comes down, it hasn't been proven. And then there's public education pays for kids in charter schools twice. And when I say this, people, what do you mean? Well, if that charter school fails, the money that the state has given to those kids is out the window, and those kids have to go back to public schools. So therefore, for those kids for that educational year to have been paid for twice. So charter schools are not the panacea. Charter schools are one part of the agreement. And I will say to you, there are some good charter schools, but not all charter schools are equal.
We do have quite a few callers on the line. Keith calling from Columbus. Keith, good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, hi. How you doing?
Doing well, sir.
I worked for Columbus City Schools for 28 years. I did data analysis and all kinds of custom reporting. And I've worked with Bill Bush on some of the data analysis that they were doing for the data scrubbing story. How you doing, Bill?
Good. How are you, Keith?
Not too bad. But I wanted, you know, a couple points. One, I think the levy should be voted down unless the Columbus School Board, with the exception of Mike Wiles, who I think really does have the interests of the city at heart, but the other 6, led by Carol Perkins, really needs to resign if that levy has a chance at all. I mean, Carol Perkins did interfere quite substantially in the investigation of that, along with Gene Harris, and also my superiors at the Kingswood Data Center. That you know, when I worked there, I retired in January 2012. But you know, I think until the school board resigns, just for sheer incompetence, if not responsibility, for the data scrubbing, they just need to go away, or that levee's dead in the water.
But there's real no real hope of that happening, is there, Keith? I don't.
Why not?
I just don't see it happening.
Wouldn't they honestly say, "Hey, look, we did a horrible job. Why shouldn't we leave?" Are they that much of a politician that they can't afford to do that?
I don't know.
Anything. It would be interesting to see if the Dispatch editorial could come out saying, you know, you six, you ought to leave. You've done nothing about this. You admit nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You say that this all happened and we were completely clueless about it.
It's not out of the realm of possibilities. I'm just I'm a little skeptical that it would happen, Keith. Thanks for your call, though.
Well, and another thing, you know, Sam Gresham, I can actually back up a lot of what he said. Now, I understand this is I live in the data world, and I really form my opinions based on what I saw. Now, I ran statistics every week on all kinds of demographics on Columbus because we're always trying to figure out the best way to make students to succeed. And I'll tell you two things that came up, and these cannot be controlled by the school.
Real quickly.
This is controlled. Okay. The number of times a student moves.
Right.
Changes their family household is hugely,
yes, it
hugely
is.
Influences their ability to succeed in school. The second is their parental situation. I mean, I know this has been trumpeted everywhere, but two-parent families do better.
Sure.
And I don't know. And these are societal things. They can't address that in the school. So the city, state, and federal government, if that's something that they want to emphasize, then they can set policies to make that happen, or at least encourage that to happen, which isn't happening anymore.
Oh, Keith, well, all great thoughts, and I'm sorry, I'm trying not to be rude here, but we just have to move along. Thanks for your call. Bill Bush, you also did some reporting on the school board meeting in secret, or meeting in private, at least. Secret might be a little bit of a loaded word, but...
No, they met in secret.
Has there been any kind of substantial push to get board members to resign?
No. I mean, they're elected for four-year terms. I've not... heard of any movement to start some recall election or something like that. I don't know of any such movement. So it looks like they're here until their terms are up or until voters decide to change them.
Yeah, well, we do. Beth calling. Beth, good morning. Thanks for your call.
Good morning.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I was one of the protesters at Indianola Alternative K-8 school on the day that Governor Kasich signed the awful bill. And reports were that it was more like 200 people, just so you know. My question, I guess, is, I mean, clearly you know my point of view. I am conflicted. I have four children in Columbus City Schools, and I am, of course, while I would support a levy normally, I am concerned about the tie to the charter school. I am wondering about what are the ramifications of voting no. Does no money go to charter schools? Does less. What happens?
I'm not entirely sure that's worked out. Bill Bush, you might be more equipped to speak about that than me.
This is 9.01 mils, and if this fails, neither charters nor the district will get any money until voters say they're going to approve more mils.
So the charter schools will not get a cut of currently existing tax money that I'm paying on my property right now.
Oh, no. The state law that was passed basically sets aside specific millage that has to be approved by the voters. Right now, that's set at 1 mil. So unless the voters...
For charter schools.
For charter schools. So unless the voters approve that 1 mil, the charter schools could not legally... The district could not legally give any money to charter schools
unless the voters
approve that.
And they do also... Excuse me, Sam, real quick. They do receive more money in the latest state budget.
Yes, they do.
Right, budgeted from the state, but not specifically budgeted from the money that Columbus taxpayers pay for our schools.
She needs to know, though, it's all or nothing. There is not a separate line for voting for charter schools or voting against charter school. It's all in the one package. So you have to vote for that package in total. And I think that's one of the things that make it difficult. Just like this lady on the phone here. She's perplexed by the ideas of supporting charter. And I think it makes it very difficult for people to vote on this issue.
Well, Beth, thanks for your call. We do have to take a real quick break, and then we'll be right back to the conversation about Columbus City Schools and the levy coming up on this fall's ballot. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher here on 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown, sitting in for Ann today. In this hour, we've been discussing a new school levy in Columbus that will face voter approval this November. Still with us is Bill Bush, education reporter from the Columbus Dispatch, Sam Gresham, and local education activist. And joining us now is Bill Sims. He's president of the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools. Welcome to the show, Bill Sims.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you with us this morning. We've heard some tough accusations against charter schools so far this hour. I assume you want to respond to any and all of those. I guess if we could start, Sam, questioning the academic record of charter schools.
Well, you know, I hate these zero-sum sort of conversations. Mm-hmm. I think that the notion that if charter schools win, traditional district schools lose, and vice versa is kind of a silly game at this point. Charter schools are here to stay in Ohio. And I think in the case of the Columbus Education Commission, we're talking about an interest in partnership with high-performing charter schools. And some of the best schools in the state are charter schools in the Franklin County area.
The Columbus Dispatch has reported that they've only identified 9 charter schools in this area that would definitely qualify for levy money under this provision. How many – have you cleared this up, what exactly a nonprofit charter school is and which would qualify for levy money?
All charter schools are nonprofit schools. All charter schools are run by nonprofit boards.
There are no for-profit charter schools?
That's correct.
They're run by for-profit companies, but they're considered nonprofits themselves?
Some charter schools are run by for-profit companies, but they are still accountable to nonprofit boards. They're all 501c3s.
So you would expect that every local charter school would qualify for levy money under this?
I would think so
if they're high performing
and if they agree to the provisions of the so-called partnership.
And how is that a big caveat there, agreeing to this partnership? Is that a main stumbling block?
We don't know what the provisions of the partnership are yet. They're yet to be defined.
Sam Gresham, you look ready to ask a lot of questions.
My reading of the legislation, 167, charter schools to be eligible had to have a balance sheet that indicated that they had $500,000 and that they had to have been operating for 5 years. Now, I think that sets out entirely different groups of charter schools, and I think that stayed through the whole legislation. So it is a criteria than by anything else that establishes a threshold for admission to going after Columbus Public School money.
Bill Sims.
Well, I think most of the high-performing charter schools in the state have been around for a while. It takes a while to ramp up. Schools that start in year one, year two, year three are sometimes moving through the progression of quality. But I think that all of the schools that the Columbus City Schools would be looking to partner with would have been around for at least 5, 6, 7, 10 years.
And we're all very involved in this, but for the average listener sitting at home right now, as briefly as possible, what exactly is a charter school? Just help the casual listener know what a charter school is if they don't know.
Well, a charter school is a public school. All charter schools are public schools. They are run by independent boards. The boards of charter schools are different than the boards of traditional district schools in that they are not elected boards. So they are 501c3 nonprofit boards that are responsible for running the schools.
There is a case that will soon be decided by the Ohio Supreme Court on whether Akron-based White Hat Management has to provide some basic information to the public. How does your group feel about that case?
We're silent on it. I mean, I think that it doesn't serve any purpose for us to comment on a case that's pending before the Supreme Court right now. It's a complicated issue. For-profit companies, what of those public monies should be subject to transparency and what should not? I mean, I think that's the case before the Supreme Court, and we'll let them make that decision.
Listeners, give us a call, 614-292-8513. If you have a question about charter schools, if you have a question about the levy going before Columbus voters in the fall, how active has your group been and how active will they be in the campaign going up to the levy?
Well, we support the work of the commission. And when I say that, it is not that we support it because this is a unique case. We have always felt that collaborations between charter schools and traditional district schools are a good thing. In fact, the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools has sponsored two national conferences on collaborations, one which was held here in Columbus 3 years ago, and one which was held just at the end of last year in Denver, Colorado. So we think that there's a lot of good synergy that there's potential for that in these kinds of collaborations. I think that charter schools are places, they're cauldrons of a lot of innovation, and I think that the support of the central offices of districts can be important to the support of charter schools in the long term, facilities and so forth. So I think there's a lot of good stuff that can happen if these two independent public school entities start to collaborate.
Sam Gresham or Bill Bush, have either of you heard about an anti-levy campaign, any kind of negative ads or anything like that?
I don't know if there's going to be an organized campaign. That may be difficult, but there may be a fragmented, understood negative campaign by groups talking about this. And that will be difficult. But I need to clarify something about the history of charter schools. Charter schools started out with vouchers. That is, they required the government to do vouchers in order to send kids to independent schools. Then there were two organizations on a national basis that pushed legislation to create what we now know as the charter schools and make state government give people money from the public coffers to do this. I've been in educational movements where we've created our own school, independent schools. We never asked the government for a dime. Now, there are two national prominent Republicans who pushed this legislation and who have made lots of money. Now, my final point is the word nonprofit is a misnomer. The NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and every hospital in Franklin County is a nonprofit. So the name itself is a misnomer.
Listeners, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Do you agree with Sam Grisham? Are you more with Bill Sims, the president of the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools? I'm not trying to pit you two against each other necessarily. You just have some opposing ideas. What about that Sam's comment that no charter schools are really nonprofits?
Well, legally speaking, they are absolutely nonprofits, and I don't think that any argument can be made otherwise. I do think, though, that it's important to make a distinction between vouchers and charter schools. The voucher program has, in essence, nothing to do with charter schools. It has something to do with charter schools, but it is a separate program and entity entirely. We have, at the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools, we have members, and none of our members are vouchers in any way. Vouchers can be used for kids to go to parochial schools, private schools, and charter schools. So it's a completely different entity than the charter school system.
My point was to be made that it was the beginning point of the creation of the concept.
You kind of ushered in the idea of
yes,
charter schools.
You are right. They are separate and distinct. But if you look at an incremental scale of how we built up to what they call community schools now, it started with the voucher program. And I think you would agree with me that that was the genesis of how we got to what we call community schools or charters or whatever today. I think you would have to agree with me that historically correct.
We might be getting a little lost in the weeds here. We are talking about the Columbus City Schools levy going on the fall ballot. Listeners, if you have a comment, a concern, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Again, 614-292-8513. And we do have Bill from Columbus on the line. Bill, I hope you're still with us.
I'm still with you. I think it's a silly semantic argument to speak of charter schools as public schools. They aren't public. They're private. They aren't controlled by the public. Their board isn't established by the public. It isn't appointed by the public. And the public doesn't make the rules. They do. It's a private school. And as a person who's lived in Columbus all his life, attended public schools, as did my children, I'm not going to vote to spend my tax dollars on private schools. I think that is a serious mistake. And regardless of what they say now about who would get them and who wouldn't, once the camel's nose is under the tent, the game is over. We need to spend our public money on our public schools, and that's the end of it.
Bill from Columbus, thanks for your call. Bill Sims, obviously, I would assume you disagree sharply with Bill.
I actually had the volume turned down on my headset, so I don't.
Bill says they're not public schools at all; they're private, and public tax dollars should not be going to charter schools.
Well, public tax dollars do go to charter schools, and they are public schools.
Local tax levy dollars.
Right, and to date, no local tax dollars go to public school to charter schools, with the exception of the Cleveland Transformation Plan.
Sam Gresham, go ahead.
If this is such a good plan, why doesn't Worthington, Reynoldsburg, Gahanna, Hilliard, Pickerington all jump on this bandwagon? I haven't seen them want to dilly up their monies to go to charter schools. And those are some of the best schools. Bexley, second best school, high school in the state. They're not considering this type of format in improving their schools.
Well, students don't need to transfer out of those districts, right? I mean, Columbus has a lot more failing schools than Hilliard and Dublin.
Well, you could say that as a starting point, but if you look at urban schools across the country, apples to apples, don't give me Worthington. Columbus Public Schools, when compared to other urban schools, is not a bad school system. And in fact, it was an improving school system after Dr. Gene Harris took the program over, and it was doing better and progressively getting better. If you understand the complexity of private schools and suburban schools and the difference from urban schools, it's not fair to compare them.
We have another caller with a comment along those same lines. Ira from Columbus. Go ahead, Ira.
Yes, I'd just like to say that, first of all, I agree with most everything that Mr. Gresham has said. And I had children in school that were classmates of Mr. Gresham's children. And both of us sent our kids there because we believed in the Columbus Public Schools and the good programs they have. I think one of the biggest problems the Columbus Public Schools has is they don't publicize all the good things that are going on in the Columbus schools, all the programs, all the accomplishments of the students, scholarships, and things the students get. They just let everyone out talk about all the bad things. On the other hand, the charter schools, I don't know where they're getting the money, if this is public money, but they're out there advertising on TV and radio, touting their programs. And I'd certainly like to see the Columbus schools explaining to the public the kind of good things that are going on there.
Ira, will you be voting for or against the levy?
Well, I will probably be voting against the levy, even though I'm a big supporter of the Columbus schools, because I don't want the money going to the charter schools.
And you don't want the money going to the charter schools because you don't think there's enough oversight, or what's your?
Well, I don't think that I don't think draining money away from the Columbus schools to I know your other guests would not agree with this, but you know, private schools that have their own agendas and their own for-profit managers and things, I don't think that's a good use of public money.
I think I'm speaking for Bill Sims here, I suppose, but other proponents of charter schools have said students are leaving the traditional public schools in increasing numbers to go to charter schools. Why shouldn't the money as well?
Well, I think that part of the reason is what I've said, is that the charter schools are out there touting everything that's that they think is going on. They're advertising and so forth, while the public schools, for whatever reason, you don't see them going out there and explaining to people the real opportunities in the public schools. I don't think you can just let things go on and expect people to know about it, not in, you know, today's world with all the constant advertising and social media and all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ira, thanks so much for your call.
Mm-hmm.
Take care. Bill Sims, I seem to have quite a few callers lining up who don't seem to fully understand the nonprofit-profit relationship. Can you explain that again, or maybe a little more in depth, exactly how these schools are nonprofit but owned by for-profit companies?
Well, they're not owned by for-profit companies.
Explain that. I'm sorry.
Some of them are managed by for-profit companies. Some are not. If a group decides to set up a charter school, and let's say that it's and there are all kinds of charter schools. There are dropout recovery schools. There are STEM schools. There are general education schools. There are schools for special needs children.
It's a construction trade charter school, I saw.
Sure. And so in some of these cases, they're looking for expert management in those particular areas. And they will hire a for-profit management company to come in and manage the school. And in some of those cases, the for-profit management company really manages everything. And in some cases, they manage just degrees of the management. For example, some management companies actually hire the faculty, and some management companies don't. In those cases where they don't, the governing board actually does the hiring of the faculty. But I, you know, I want to make a comment about...
We are running out of time, so as quickly as you can.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think that the Cleveland public schools, municipal public schools, have taken some great leadership here. I think that Mayor Jackson's vision of a portfolio district that includes public charter schools as well as the traditional district schools creates a great environment for parents' choice.
And that we will have to leave with that. My thanks to all of the guests this hour. Bill Sims, the president of the Ohio Alliance for Public Charter Schools. Dr. Dan Good, the superintendent of Columbus City Schools, who joined us earlier this hour. And Bill Bush, education reporter at the Columbus Dispatch. And Sam Gresham, a government consultant and local education activist. Thanks to you all. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.